Unsettled. Unsettled. Let's see what they need. Sometimes mom is just about out of orange juice, milk, coffee, things that she really needs to start the day. So I'll check back in with them and see if we can hold off. I have to shut phone right now for class. I have to shut phone right now.
Betty.
Hey.
Oh yeah, I'm having breakfast too.
Good morning.
Hi guys.
Hey.
Hello everybody. It's a rainy, rainy day.
It's gray.
My sump pump has been running like every 10 minutes here. It's like
it's better than not.
Well, yeah, we invested in a new one this spring and got a backup battery because we're at the bottom of a lot of hills.
Yeah. Well, we have a flooded basement, but it's a water heater. Yes.
Ooh. Horrible.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Any boxes, rugs, furniture?
Probably most stuff. Yeah. We have... somebody came in with fans and dehumidifiers, so we've just kind of been staying out of there.
Do you know what caused it to flood?
No, just the water heater broke in some nasty way.
Oh boy.
Ugh, I just spoke to somebody else who had that.
We've had it.
And we were just lucky to really have like figured it out because it wasn't like we were hearing water, right? Anyway. Sometimes you actually, could have been worse.
So did you have to replace the water heater?
Yeah, we already did that, thank goodness.
Yeah.
It's hard to be without hot water, without hot water for a couple of days.
Oh, wow. Oh,
sorry to hear that.
Yeah, happens.
But thank you. Cousin. Well, I'm glad it's fixed.
Thank you, me too.
Morning, everyone.
Morning. Sorry,
morning.
Running a little bit late. How's everybody this morning? Dry?
Yes.
Yes.
More or less? More or less?
Yeah.
So let's find a, it's nice to be with you. Let's find a, each of you find like where you're, where you can sit comfortably. Where you can be present. Where you can let go of other distractions. So this morning, I wanted us to consider the idea, experience of resilience and what that means in Jewish tradition and how we define it and how we embody it. And so there's not a great Hebrew word for resilience. I've seen a few different Hebrew words for it. There's like the word koach, which is strength, but that's not exactly it. And I know that last week we spent some time with equanimity, that sort of inner space of balance, of minuchat hanefesh, of the balance of the soul. And it's kind of that, but not exactly that either. And so the word that I decided on, and I've seen in some sources, is hatmada. There's two ways I've seen it spelled. Part of it is from the idea of standing, la'amod, like to stand oneself up. And also the word tamid means eternal. So there's something long lasting about the idea of resilience that is eternal, which I find particularly intriguing this week in Torah, because this week's Torah portion is Chaye Sarah, which translates as the life of Sarah, but begins with her passing. So I'll get to that in a moment. This idea, though, of tamid, of eternity in Hatmada, shows up in a lot of places, but the line that arose for me, one of my favorite lines in our liturgy altogether, comes from the Yotzer prayer, the morning prayer about creation. And it says, Uftuvo mechadesh b'chol yom tamid ma'aseh v'reshit. There's that word tamid. Uftuvo, God's goodness, mechadesh b'chol yom, from chadash, new, renews every day, eternally, tamid ma'aseh v'reshit. God's creation is renewed every day. God's goodness is renewed in creation every day. So that's where I'm beginning us this morning, is this sense of each day when we wake up, an opportunity to experience creation anew, to recommit ourselves to where we are in this moment, to raise our souls and ourselves up in a new day. And so that is how I'm looking at what resilience is, to have that sense of eternity that and standing, that we can stand again, that we can recover from difficulties, from toughness. A dictionary definition of resilience, right, is the ability of a substance or an object to spring back into shape, the idea of elasticity. So how in a mindfulness practice, in a spiritual way, in our Jewish way, can we think about springing back into shape when things have bent us and crushed us or changed us or hit at us? So not just weathering it, but actually coming back into a place of ourselves, of wholeness. So the American Psychological Association defines resilience, because of course this is a psychological and emotional quality that's addressed, as the process of adapting well in the face of adversity, trauma, tragedy, threats, and significant sources of stress. None of us have had any of that. Right? We've had losses. I could name a few. You could name more. but, you know, in big ways, right? Losses of everyday activities that have framed and shaped our lives. And I guess I'm thinking about it because we know we're heading into wintertime and things are, while we might have hoped they would be resolved, they're not. The loss of all the things that we, the experiences, the cultural experiences that we had of theater, of travel. John opened the medicine cabinet this morning. He goes, remember when I used to use a travel bag? Remember that? Like, look at that. There it is. Right? The loss of direct in-person participation with all the communities that we're a part of. The loss of the ways we're accustomed to work. In today's Washington Post, right? There's the story of how do you reconfigure your office at home? You're both at home. Like all these things, the changes, the loss of the ways of education, the loss of sharing familiar rituals. I don't mean this to be like a depressing time. There's a lot of loss. There's things that have been found too. There's new ways of connecting. I hear stories from you and all of you all the time. I talk to my grandchildren every week now. I FaceTime with whomever now. Like things that we didn't do before. We were either too busy or we just didn't think about using technology in those ways. You know, when we lose things, we certainly get an appreciation for them in a different way. And how do we hold on to that appreciation so we don't take things for granted as life continues to unfold? I've seen in our community a greater consciousness, not that our community wasn't before, but an even greater consciousness for those in need around us. And that spirit for community activism and for engaging. So resilience, cultivating a mindful inner space to grow our resilience, I think it helps us make the losses matter. Like it gives us something to hold on to. It gives us some meaning beyond just living in the loss and the grief and waiting till it passes. And we see that in Torah this week. It begins with Sarah's passing, and Abraham has to contend with that passing. We presume on some level that it is deeply painful for him. I don't think we have reason not to presume it, though we know that he's done some things that haven't necessarily, we're not certain that it's taken Sarah's feelings into account. I can't imagine how she might have been feeling when he decided to take Isaac to the mountain to sacrifice him. Like that may have caused a little bit of a rift in their relationship. But still, they were together a very long time. And so, you know, he's in his grief, and we can see a journey of resilience. He begins with trying to find a place to bury her, right? Honoring her memory, finding a suitable, long-lasting burial place that's going to last tamid for generations, that sense of resilience, right? He doesn't just try and find a place for her, but it's a place that needs to last. And then when that's done, he moves forward. He looks for a wife for Isaac and tries to continue his life forever changed as it is. So everything that happens to us is change, and every experience that shapes us, it can be seen as both good and bad. So some of our mindfulness is letting go of that judgment of good or bad and just being present to the things that shape us, to the things that happen, and then being able to respond. And that, I think, is creating that stance, that hatmada of resilience, of being able to have things happen and then resume our shape. The air fills us again. Our breath fills us again. The future never unfolds the way we expect it to. Even when things go according to the way we had hoped, like it's never exactly what we imagined. I read a quote yesterday by Walt Whitman. The present is as uncertain as the future, I think is what it was. But when something happens that we don't expect, the emotional soup that like follows the stressful event, the stuff that we whip up, the negative stories and the narrative and the stuff we tell ourselves, the rumination, that's the less useful part of our experience. And noticing that, being present to it, recognizing that, like, the emotions arise, but holding them with a gentleness and a curiosity rather than a judgment or a blame of ourselves, can change our brains, can change our souls to be more resilient to future stressful events. So I think about this practice all the time. And, you know, I'm here with you every week because I'm struggling with this every week too. It's not like I've perfected this. So the heart of mindfulness is doing our best to navigate our experience, our crises, with attentiveness and with compassion. So that was a little bit of a longer introduction, but let's just sit for a few minutes, and I'm going to invite you to absorb that. And I'm going to share another couple of ideas as we just sit and breathe. So if our Jewish mindfulness can help us use different Jewish tools and ideas to build resilience, the image that I am thinking, and how do we do it without judgment? Because I think that's what takes the air out of our resilience, of being able to resume our prior shape. So let's let your breath come in and out. You know, every night, as the battery on your cell phone dies, diminishes, runs out, I imagine that you just shut down your phone, or you plug it in, or you plug it in to recharge. Unless you're maybe like caught in the middle of a snowstorm without your cell phone working, you probably don't get particularly frustrated or upset that it's run out, because that's what happens. The battery runs out, you recharge it. You give it time to gather up the electricity that it needs to work again. Just like our cell phones, we need to plug into our internal sources of energy to recharge what we have within. And so we do that just to start with our breath. That's resilience. Allowing ourselves the time to plug back in and recharge. So you might notice on your in-breath, in-breaths, a sense of drawing energy of resilience from your internal source, from the outlet in the wall. Where do you draw your recharging from? And the out breath is making space for that resilience. That energy that you have that can take you through your day, that can power you through your day. And if you notice that you're starting to think about the things that you are powering yourself for, or what you might not have enough power for, the judgments and the distractions, see if you can return to your breath. allowing it to fill you and recharge you. So I'm curious, is it easy, hard, neutral to think of yourself as embodying resilience?
I have two things I'm thinking about. One is, why do we call our religious school Talmid? Is that the idea of generation to generation?
I think so, but the name predates me. But okay. I think so.
It's a relatively new name. Anyway, that's been about resilience. Is there a genetic component to a trait like that, do you think? I mean, I'm saying this obviously for a reason.
I don't know. I haven't done enough reading or research to know if there's genetics. I would suspect that there's all kinds of, we have all kinds of genetic predispositions, physical as well. But I also know from enough reading that there are things we can avoid doing to either enhance those predispositions or bring forward other predispositions. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there's an actual genetic component, but I do believe that to some extent we're all still in, if we work at it, we also can exert some control on sort of what kinds of traits we work on and can arise. So
sure.
I don't know.
Sure. I wonder what other people think about that.
Yeah, me too. Okay. Karen and Meryl.
Okay. I don't think it's necessarily genetic, but I would say that my sister and I are very resilient because we were raised to be that way. But as I was thinking just before, we had the resilient piece, but we didn't have the piece of dwelling at all on what might be bringing us down. So if it was a health thing, if it was something, a failure at school or whatever it was a push to just bounce right back. But I'm thinking that wasn't necessarily good because we did not almost acknowledge before you can bounce back. It's as if we were not acknowledging that the batteries were dying. And I think sometimes you have to just say, okay, I need to recharge. I'm not explaining it really well, but it wasn't genetic. It was really more cultural with us that it was all about, come on, let's kind of put the next foot forward and move on. But you sometimes have to stop and say, what is it that you're dealing with?
Yeah, I'm not sure that would be resilience. Yes, we probably in our culture define that as resilience, but I think the piece of being present to the experience before and sort of being with that before you can bend back up, right? I think that is an important piece of resilience in a resilience, Meryl.
So in terms of the DNA piece, I know that there are studies now that show that trauma can be handed down through DNA, and that there's a genetic component there. So it makes me wonder if, you know, resilience can also be passed down through DNA. But what I really was thinking about is, because I am someone who thinks of myself as a resilient person, but I think there are limitations to the idea of resilience, and that resilience, if it's about coming back to the original shape, it feels like not enough, because it feels like any of these situations that knock us over to begin with have probably changed us to the point where we don't want to come back to the original shape. We should be changed right. To some degree. So whether we're a little bit softer in some ways and a little bit harder in other ways, for me, it feels more like perseverance than resilience, because it's about meeting yourself where you are now, that you're changed by the experience, and then finding a way to move forward from there.
Mm-hmm. And resilience and perseverance, that was another quality that I was sort of thinking about and working with, because those are maybe more closely related than like strength or equanimity. They have a much closer relationship. And hot mada can also be defined as perseverance. So thank you for raising that. Barbara.
Yeah, I can't help being a psychologist sometimes. So depression has a genetic component, and depression kind of robs us of our resilience quite a bit. People who are depressed will believe everything's bad, it's my fault, and it's always going to be this way. So that makes things hard. I think, like what you said about the Torah portion that is missing right now for a lot of us, is the sense of change in the future, okay? Or like new relationships. So he was looking for, a new wife or new things. We don't have a lot of those opportunities available to us now. And, you know, it's harder for some of us than for others, but I think that's kind of an unnatural part of what we're going through, because part of resilience, I think, is hope and adaptation and, you know, maybe making some changes that are really hard for us to make right now.
Yes, so much. And that's exactly the challenge. Right, is that we can't control the circumstances. So, you know, we can look at Abraham, and Abraham was looking for a wife for his son, not for himself. So, like, I think sometimes to use this practice to be able to like open our eyes again and see what is possible with what is real in this moment. And so, yes, on the one hand, like, I mean, everything you said is so true. And can we, in the experience of what is right now, find opportunities to to see, to do, to try things differently, or to just be with the changes that are happening in the moment. That's that Walt Whitman piece that just stuck, like it was like a little worm in my head, right? The present is as uncertain as the future. We like to think, we like to tell ourselves that it will, I mean, and we hold hope, but you know, that once we get to somewhere else, it will be better. That's not hope. That's sort of like denial, not dealing with what is right now. And so we can just live in the future. But the future is no more certain or uncertain than right now is. So what can we do, even with all of these constraints, to live in a way that that we can find more, more inner settledness? I don't want to say inner peace, because I always think about, like, you know, the isolated person on the mountain, like everything's great, and it's not. But how can we live more with more settledness, even as what is happening right now feels very unsettled. So that's what this work is, to try and figure out how we do that. You know, we've talked some about the midah, the measure of patience, of savlanut, of and patient in English, we think about like patience is just waiting. The Musar trait of savlanut comes from the Hebrew word to suffer or to bear. And the idea is that we, cultivating that trait is bearing the present moment until the time is right for action. So it's not like endless bearing. So like that too is wrapped up in our experiences right now of how can we bear the present? And when we can bear the present in a way that isn't, that actually isn't suffering, right? It's to bear a burden, at least bold. When we can do that, we actually are cultivating a stance of hatmada, of resilience and perseverance, that move us forward. So we're not just waiting. So all of these tools and ideas and practices and ways to think and give ourselves time and space are all just that. They're all just tools to help each of us. And for each, here's the thing, is for each of us, our spiritual curriculum is different. Like we all have like this mass of inner qualities, but the balance of them for each of us, like goes back to what Ellen asked about sort of genetic predisposition. I think there's spiritual predisposition, right? Each of us have a different map of all these same spiritual genetics. So for one, like, patience is a much harder midah to work on. For another, humility. For another, perseverance. Like it, so the sort of the quantity work balance is different for each person. You know, there's one person sits at traffic lights, like, you know, totally unbothered, and another person sits at traffic lights frustrated every time they get to a red light. It's just like, so there's just different spiritual curricula that we each have. As well. So all of these tools are like all for each of us in different measure, in different framework, in different quantity, I guess. Anybody else? So an idea of resilience and perseverance, hatmada, is anchored in hope, right? It's not just a waiting. Like hope is a belief that things will get better. It's not about living in denial. It's about giving us some anchor, because when we have that sense that things will be different, will feel better for us, then we have a better ability to weather what is in the present, to persevere, to reshape ourselves. Maybe it's not just, like Meryl said, not just returning to our original shape because it's changed us, but to reshape ourselves into the fullest, and kind of like just the air coming back in, but the shape may be different, but like we're filled up again. There's a lovely line in Proverbs. It's been quoted in a lot of traditions, but it says a righteous person falls 7 times and rises 8. So, you know, there's the portion begins, the Torah portion begins with Abraham and Sarah's death and grief and loss. And what are the things that we do both ritually, right? There's ritual, he's looking for a burial site. He's grieving. He's trying to find his way. He reaches out and flails. I'm not saying that like going and deciding that he's going to find a wife for Isaac is the answer, but that's his way of starting to move forward in life. Maybe that was a bad choice. But I think about Isaac too in the portion. So, you know, after the near sacrifice last week in Genesis, we don't hear from Isaac for a while. There's medieval midrashim that say he was actually sacrificed and comes back to life. In their context of being persecuted during the Crusades, those are not surprising midrashim. But I think about Isaac. You know, the experience on the mountain. He's falling down. He's lost. He's failing. He's silent. His mother passes. We don't know that they had any last words. He's hidden from us. He's hiding from us. His mother, you know, he's almost sacrificed. His mother dies. And then he has no voice in the choice of his mate. Like there's a lot that knocks him over too. Isaac is sort of, he's definitely that, he's not the middle child, but you know, between Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Isaac is the middle, sort of as if a middle child, not necessarily quite here or there. But in this week's Torah portion, there's this lovely line that after Rebecca comes back, it says, is brought back to him. It says, Vayetze Yitzchak lasuch basadeh lifnot arev. Vayetze Yitzchak, Isaac went out, lasuach. That's the key word, basadeh, to take a stroll, lasuach basadeh, in the outside, in the grass, in the field, lifnot arev, before the evening, before the darkness came. And Rashi teaches that this was no mere evening stroll, but that it was actually a journey of meditation and prayer before this change that was coming in his life. And I also think that the fact that Isaac is not sitting inside contemplating, but is out in nature, basadeh, is an important piece of how Isaac is dealing with what is all the stresses that have happened to him. What's his response? He takes time, he meditates and prays, and he does it outside. Like there is a huge power in nature, in seeing ourselves in the bigger world. And especially as maybe it will get colder. Was it 70 degrees yesterday? But that as the days shorten, as the winter comes, like how do we not find ourselves in that very small space, but continue to find sustenance. And I believe perseverance and resilience through a connection to nature. Even you know, if we think of winter as the recharging, right? Winter is plugging, is nature plugging back in to recharge. So how can we actually take from that experience and even use that for our own recharging? And to note from Isaac, like our journeys of resilience, of recharging, our meditation and prayer and practice and spiritual skills, nature, learning, finding moments of anchor in our own breath, in seeking and discovering connections beyond ourselves. And while that is going to take more effort than it used to, right? Because we would just get in our car and go wherever we were going. And so you ran into people and you saw people and you weren't behind a mask and you could tell people's expressions and all those things. So it's going to take more effort. It's going to take more intentionality to do those things. But I think his journey is this little line here is an important instruction for us in intentionality and mindfulness, of taking that meditative stroll, of putting ourselves out there, of of paying attention to our ability to cultivate resilience and perseverance in the face of being knocked down a lot. So there's another image that I actually, I'll skip that image. I'm looking at my time. Do you all know, I don't even know where this story comes from, and I heard it, oh my gosh, 35 years ago, I taught it to my kids. Do you know the story of the egg, the carrot, and the coffee?
No.
Okay, I'll make it short. The story that I remember hearing, it's a parent and a child. It's talking about resilience. But there are three ways that we can respond to the stresses that happen to us. If you take a pot of boiling water, right? Stress, heat, boiling, angry, all the metaphor that boiling water is, right? If you put an egg in the boiling water, what happens to it?
Hard boiled.
Gets hard, right? So it hardens up. The stress hardens it. It changes it. It's going to change it, but it makes it hard. If you put a carrot in boiling water, what happens to it?
Softens.
Softens. It gets soft. It can fall apart too much, right? It can get like mushy, gross. If you put coffee in boiling water, what happens to it? What, Meryl?
It dissolves. Like it dissolves. becomes part of the water.
It does. And it becomes something else wonderful. You wouldn't eat let's say it's instant coffee. You wouldn't eat the coffee, but you would drink it, right? It becomes something wonderful with a new aroma, something different. So we have options when stresses happen. So maybe a little bit is like what Ellen said. You know, there may be some inherent, I don't know, but I think I like to think that we have the option when the stresses happen. How are we going to be resilient? Are we going to become like the egg? Are we going to become like the carrot? Or are we going to become like the coffee? And what do we need to do? How do we need to pay attention differently to our own inner experience? It's because I think that the ways that we can make changes in ourselves are being present to and attentive to and aware of the experiences that arise and the emotions that arise in ourselves. And to do that in a way that is without judgment. If we just say, okay, I'm going to do this differently. I'm going to react differently. We're not paying attention to all of the other signs and all of the other things that are going to go on in us before that situation happens. So that's what a spiritual practice, a mindful practice, thinking about different qualities that we might want to raise up in ourselves or work on or pay attention to in ourselves. That's the connection. It's not so simple to just say, I'm going to change a habit. I'm going to change a way I do things. We have to first pay attention to what happens. Like if I have a propensity to get angry, it's not as simple to just say, I'm not going to get angry anymore, right? What are all the things inside me that are arising before that moment of anger? It may have nothing to do with anger. So I need to be ready and working and attentive to those experiences, those inner shifts in me, to then be able to change my response to things. So when we think about perseverance or resilience, it is with an eye to notice what is, what are the forces that are acting on us? You know, the flood that knocks over all the rain yesterday, like took down leaves, it may have taken down branches. It knocked over, like if you had low plants, right? Like they sink under the weight of the leaves and the water and everything for a while, but they come back. right? That sense of resilience that will sway to and fro with the water, with the stress, with what pulls us, but that we can then return to a place of fullness. Even if it's changed us, it's still a place of fullness. And how can we create opportunities for ourselves to recover from stress? Just like any other muscle that needs rest in order to then get strengthened. So I wanted to, there it goes. We're looking at the time. Okay. So we can sit and listen. This is a piece from Rachel Noemi Remen. I love her writing. She's a physician who has had a lot of physical ailments in her life, and just it's wisdom. So this is a piece she calls Wrestling with the Angel. And I'd like to share it and then let us sit with a couple of reflections on resilience. Sometimes a wound is the place where we encounter life for the first time, where we come to know its power and its ways. Wounded, we may find a wisdom that will enable us to live better than any knowledge and glimpse a view of ourselves and of life that is both true and unexpected. Almost the last story that my grandfather told me was about a man called Jacob who had been attacked in the night as he slept along the bank of a river. He had been traveling, and when he had stopped to make his meal and settled down to sleep, the place had seemed safe enough, but it was not so. He awakened to find himself gripped by muscular arms and pinned to the ground. It was so dark he could not see his enemy, but he could feel his power. Gathering all his strength, he began to struggle to be free. "Was it a nightmare, Grandpa?" I said hopefully. I often suffered from nightmares back then and had to sleep with a nightlight on. I moved closer to my grandfather and took his hand. "No, Neshamala," he answered. "It was quite real, but it happened a long time ago." Jacob could hear his attacker's breath. He could feel the cloth of his garments. He could even smell him. Jacob was a very strong man, but even using all of his strength, he could not free himself and could not pin his enemy down either. They were evenly matched, and they rolled on the ground and struggled fiercely. "How long did they struggle, Grandpa?" I asked with some anxiety. "A long, long time, Neshamala," he replied. "But the darkness does not last forever." Eventually it was dawn, and as the light came, Jacob saw that he had been wrestling with an angel. I was astonished. "A real angel, Grandpa?" I said, "with wings?" "I don't know if he had wings, Neshamala, but he was definitely an angel. With the coming of the light, the angel let go of Jacob and tried to leave, but Jacob held on to him. 'Let me go,' the angel told Jacob. 'The light has come.' But Jacob said, 'I will not let you go until you bless me.' The angel struggled hard, for he wanted badly to escape, but Jacob held him close, and so the angel gave him his blessing." I was very relieved. "Did he leave then, Grandpa? Is that the end?" I asked. "Yes," my grandfather said, "but Jacob's leg was hurt in the struggle. Before the angel left, he touched him on the place where he was hurt." This was something I could understand. Often my mother did this too. "To help it get better, Grandpa?" I asked. But my grandfather shook his head. "I do not think so, Neshamala. He touched it to remind Jacob of it. Jacob carried it all the rest of his life. It was his place of remembering." I was very puzzled by this story. How could it be that one might confuse an angel with an enemy? But grandfather said this was the sort of thing that happened all the time. Even so, he told me, it's not the most important part of the story. The most important part of the story is that everything has its blessing. In the year before he died, my grandfather told me this story several times. 8 or 9 years afterward, in the middle of the night, the disease I had lived with for more than 45 years declared itself in the most dramatic way imaginable. I had a massive internal hemorrhage. There was no warning at all. I was in a coma and hospitalized for months. The darkness and the struggle lasted for many years afterward. Looking back on it, I have wondered if my grandfather, old and close to the time of his death, had not left me with this story as a compass. It's a puzzling story, a story about the nature of blessings and of the nature of enemies. How tempting to let the enemy go and flee, and to flee. To put the struggle behind you as quickly as possible and get on with your life. Life might be easier then, but far less genuine. Perhaps the wisdom lies in engaging the life you have been given as fully and courageously as possible and not letting go until you find the unknown blessing that is in everything. So I invite you to re-comfort yourselves if you've been moving or holding yourself. Allow your breathing to resume easily and comfortably as it does on its own. And perhaps the images that will arise are the things that you might be fleeing from or letting go of too quickly before you find the blessing in them. And where might you hold on even to those stresses, to those places of remembering, so that you can find the blessing in those places? For I believe that is resilience. Any last thoughts or comments for this morning? Questions? Oh, may we all notice the places that are places of blessing, places that we might have thought were places of hurt and stress, that we can remember blessing as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a good
day. Stay dry.
Have a good day, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.